Okay, it's time for Acoustic Sailing. Thank you, Aftertaste. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Hello, everyone. It's 4:01. It's time for Acoustic Sailing. I hope you're doing well out there. We have all kinds of music that I hope you enjoy it. I hope you like what you hear. This is WMFO in Medford, and we'll be back with music and an interview with Alan Eskins, the best-selling author. He'll be on the show. He'll be calling in from Minnesota. So stick around for that. Remember, you are listening to WMFO Medford.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story.
One night, I was at a bar. I was having fun with my friends.
I had one too many drinks.
I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react. The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
And your friends right here on WMFO Medford. And when I come back after the song, if everything goes right, and I think it shall, Alan Eskins will be chatting with me and talking about his writing, talking about his philosophies, and just having a wonderful time at WMFO. And so get ready, folks. Alan will be talking soon. WMFO Medford. Here we go. Check out this one first.
More or less in keeping with the in the spirit of the season. Death is an angel sent down from above, sent for the flowers and the lilies we love. Surely it's so, for in heaven's own way, the soul is a flower of the master's bouquet. Gathering flowers for the master's bouquet, beautiful flowers that never decay, gathered by angels and carried forever to bloom in the master's bouquet. We must be faithful till last work is done, blooming away in the warmth of the sun. But every bud in each blossom someday will bloom as a flower in the master's bouquet. Gathering flowers for the master's bouquet, beautiful flowers that never decay, gathered by angels and carried away forever to bloom in the master's bouquet. Gathering flowers for the master's bouquet, beautiful flowers that never decay, gathered by angels, carried away forever to bloom the master's bouquet.
Okay, I was gathering flowers in the master's bouquet, and Without further ado, folks, here in Eskins. Hello, Alan.
Hi, Alan.
Is this Alan?
No.
Oh, who is this? Because I'm waiting for Alan Eskins to call in.
Oh, I'm Brian's off?
Yeah, Brian's, he went home. So, do you have a request?
No, I just wondered, how did Kevin Carlson die?
I think he did all right. I mean, I don't know about Kevin Carlson, but Brian had a great show, and...
No, Kevin Carlson was on WZLX. He died.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
I did not know him. But
okay.
Do you want to have a request?
What would you play?
Anything that you want to hear. This is WMFO. We play anything and you don't have to pay us.
What about Do the Tighten Up?
Okay, I'll get working on that. Have a nice one. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, fine. How am I coming through?
Hey, Alan.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm well. How you doing?
Doing great. Hey, thank you. Something you cut off, cut in. Okay. Are you ready to chat on the air? Because you are live on WMFO.
I'm ready to chat.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for calling in. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Alan Eskins. He's the best-selling author of The Life We Bury, The Guise of Another, The Heavens May Fall, The Deep Dark Descending, The Shadows We Hide, Nothing More Dangerous, and his latest book, The Stolen Hours, and his latest book is Forsaken Country. Did I miss any, Alan?
I have one more after Forsaken Country. It came out last month. It's called Saving Emma.
Oh, wonderful. And that's my daughter's name, so I'm glad you picked Saving Emma. That's really wonderful. Alan Eskins is a former defense criminal attorney, and he chose to start writing after... How many years, Alan, were you an attorney?
25.
25 years. Amazing. And you are doing extremely well with your creative writing, and I would love for any listeners to call Alan Eskins and ask him a question, or if you have any insight into murder or detective or crime work, I would love you to call in at 855-915-9636. But in the meantime, Alan, let me ask you, do you think of yourself as a murder mystery or a crime or a detective or a thriller suspense novelist, or do you just write and whatever comes out spills out?
I write, and whatever comes out spills out, but at the same time, it's important for me to write stories that are very character-driven,
mm-hmm.
that have, deeper themes than just solving a crime. Mm-hmm. So all of my novels have basically two plot lines or two planes that they work on. One is either the mystery of the thriller plot line, but the second is the human story. And I like to think of myself as a literary mystery writer, so that the mystery is there, but it's a vehicle to tell the human story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the reasons why your writing appeals to me so much, is there's layers and layers for every character, whether it's the victim or the serial killer or the crime fighter or the detective. Each character has something going on, and you learn a little bit. You just dig beneath the surface a tiny bit, and you learn a bit more of every single character. I love characters that get developed, and the way you write about them is remarkable, in my opinion. I mean, there's a character named Jeremy, and, in the first novel that I read by you, The Life We Bury, and it really struck me, some of the way you wrote and the way he spoke, in terms of, like, maybe I thought you were at college, Jeremy said, speaking in a strict staccato cadence, as if you were placing each word in a careful order upon a conveyor belt. I love that. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and in that story, to give an example of when I say I want to be a literary mystery writer, so that's a story of, that's The Life of Barry,
mm-hmm.
and that's a story of a young man named Joe Talbert who has run away from home to go to college, and he gets pulled into this mystery when he goes to a nursing home to interview somebody for a class assignment.
Mm-hmm.
But the real story is about Joe running away from his responsibility for his autistic younger brother. Their mother is a train wreck, and Joe has basically been the one to raise his younger brother, and he sees going to college as a way to escape that responsibility, but then he has to deal with the guilt of that decision. So there's this human story that's going on while there is, you know, this mystery that's unfolding.
And as you tell the story, like, Carl Iverson is the person who was in jail for most of his life for the accused of killing someone or found guilty of killing someone. And he has a conversation with the writer, this college student, and he says, killing or murdering, there's a difference. I've done both. I've killed and I've murdered. And your book explores that. And that's one of the things I like about your writing so much. You capture the essence of the character, and it's not outside of the story. It's wrapped up in the story, because every story or true story is kind of complex and dirty, and it has its own life. And the life we bury is all these layers of every single character, whether it's the character Lila, who's the girlfriend of the writer, or if, you know, Carl Iverson, you learned all about him, obviously. You learn a bit about, the Jeremy, the younger brother. And have you always felt that way about, like, characters you've written and you read in novels and books?
Well, I absolutely feel that way. When I write, I'm one of those people that outlines. And I outline for a number of reasons. First and foremost is because I want to be able to never have to look at my computer and think what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
I always know what's coming next, and I can focus as I'm writing that first draft on how to write that draft as best I can. But also, when I'm writing characters, I want to know who these characters are before I meet them or my reader meets them. I want to know their past, because everybody in a scene should want something. And that's actually Kurt Vonnegut said that. Everybody should want something, even if it's just a drink of water. And so as I'm writing, I'm constantly asking myself, what does this character want? What does that character want? And to know that, I got to know who they are before they come to the scene, before they come to the book. And so I write these biographies for my characters. Even if, you know, a lot of that biography doesn't make it into the book, I know who they are. My villains, they don't just get cut out of cardboard and thrown in there. They have a past, and that past has formed them. They are the heroes of their own stories. And so I give them a biography so I understand what was it that led them to think this way, and how do they think in terms of where they see the world, that they are the hero of the story and not the villain.
Yeah, I think you develop characters really terrifically. And what I also like how you introduce some philosophical ideas, like Occam's razor. I think in two novels you introduce that, and I think that's, you know, fascinating to add that into the story, and sort of, you know, how the detective thinks, how the police officer thinks, in kind of preparing to talk to you, I looked into all kinds of things, such as you probably are, I'm sure, with Locard's exchange principle. Anyone who comes in contact with a crime or a crime scene, there's an exchange that happens. They take away something and they leave something behind. There's always an exchange with every crime scene. And that's forensic scientists use that Locard's exchange principle all the time to trace evidence, right. Basically. You know?
That's right, yes.
It's fascinating. Like you bring up, you know, questions about God, about guilt, about isolation. I mean, one character in the book, Forsaken Country, the character of Max goes away in the woods and wants to isolate himself, and yet he can't run away from himself. I mean, that the whole concept of the guilt he feels about something he did, a terrible decision he made or something he did, he can't run away from himself. He has to deal with it, and he comes back to life by dealing with other people.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. The character story of that novel, Forsaken Country, is, you know, he's been in this cabin up north for 3.5 years waiting for catharsis to come, and it is not coming, and it's not until he's pulled out of that cabin and forced back into society that he faces, you know, who he is and what he did, and comes to terms with what he needs to come to terms with. That's exactly the point of that story.
I love that. Go ahead.
I have a book out there called Nothing More Dangerous, which was actually, I worked on that novel for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So when I first got out of law school, I started writing the short story that turned into the book Nothing More Dangerous. And that is, I think, my most philosophical book in terms of just dealing with everyday society. It takes place in 1976, and it's about a young man, a 15-year-old boy, coming to understand his prejudices when he starts the story believing that he has none. And it's when a black family moves in across the road from him that he starts to see the world through their eyes. But at the same time, it is a mystery. There is a missing woman and some stolen money, and that mystery acts as more of a thread than a centerpiece. But it's a thread to weave together all these stories that are going on around this young man that summer.
Terrific. I'm looking for, I have not read Nothing More Dangerous, but I do have that on my list to read it. I have a question for you. I found, yes. I really enjoyed, I've enjoyed everything I've written by, that I've read by you. And in The Stolen Hours, there's a character who kills, and he's basically a serial killer to simplify the storyline. And what I found, and I thought was fascinating, the character of Gavin, he thinks he's super smart, and there's hubris there, and that is part of his downfall, but that's not the whole story. I mean, I found it fascinating that there's a slice of him or a part of him that wants to get caught. And in preparing for this interview with you, I looked up, and unfortunately, I could not find too much research on a murderer's, like, a, you know, leaving behind clues to do themselves in. But I think that's a big part of The Stolen Hours. I think that's part of, you know, what Gavin's drive is. I mean, yes, he kills, and he thinks he's super smart, and he can get away with it, and he's better than other people. Almost like in Hitchcock's Rope, where a character is killed, and, you know, just for the joy of it, or just for the deviousness of it all.
And where Gavin is different from Hitchcock's Rope is the killing that he does isn't out of sheer entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
He has grown up with a chip on his shoulder, and he thinks that the people that he kills deserve it because of how they treated him.
Right.
And so he justifies it. But yes, like in Hitchcock's Rope, he does think he's super smart. And I don't remember if this made it onto the page, but his favorite novel is Silence of the Lambs. He admires Hannibal Lecter. He wants to be Hannibal Lecter, and he thinks he's as smart, much smarter than Hannibal Lecter, but his downfall is he's really not. His opinion of himself is a little larger than what he really is, but that's why he acts the way he acts, is because he thinks he's up for the challenge.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of Hitchcock, I think of Vertigo, about keeping souvenirs from a crime scene or souvenirs from a murder. And, you know, Jimmy Stewart says, you shouldn't be that sentimental. And it was the downfall, or that's the way he figured out, you know, that he was being used in a scheme to kill someone. But again,
keeping souvenirs is really common. That is part of the a serial killer's profile, is often keeping souvenirs or having mementos that bring them back to the scene and the event.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fascinating part of the Stolen Hours, is the Gavin character, how he really thinks he's hot stuff. But of course, you know, he gets caught and the bad guys lose, and that's the way it should be. One question I have for you is the whole thing about murder. I mean, in our society, murder is a big part of TV shows, a part of movies, a part of all kinds of books, of course, novels. What do you think? I mean, what is it? Like, if you ever look at the BBC, there's probably 25 shows all about murder mysteries and murder. Leonard Cohen wrote the song called The Future, and he sings that, I've seen the future, and it's murder. How long is that going to continue? What do you think? I mean,
I think it will always continue. At the top of all of my chapters, when I'm writing a chapter, one of the things that the question that I answer is, what is at stake in this chapter? And the thing about murder is, it is the highest stakes,
mm-hmm.
both in terms of the life taken, the people affected by that life taken, but also the person who committed the crime, because that's the crime that's going to send you to prison or get you executed, depending on where you are. And so it makes the stakes as high as they can be. And so as long as that's still the case, and it always will be, murder will continue to be the centerpiece of drama and fiction for eons.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. Do you want to talk a bit about some future projects, or if you're going to be coming through New England? I mean, you know, this is a Boston audience that are listening to you currently, and actually it's worldwide because we're WMFO.org. You can hear us on the internet, but locally we're 91.5 FM in Boston, or in Medford, which is next to Boston. Why don't you tell us about some of the future projects you have, Alan?
Well, before I go to future projects, let me just tell your audience that I love Bostonites, Bostonians, excuse me. I interviewed Dennis Lehane earlier this year on a podcast. He's one of my heroes in terms of writers. I've got a good friend, Hank Philippi Ryan, who I've done her podcast. I think I did her podcast twice this year. She's from out there. But as far as future projects go, so up till book 9, which is Saving Emma, my most recent book, I've written about a community of characters that were born basically in my debut novel, The Life of Barry. So I take 4 characters from The Life of Barry and I just tell their stories going forward. And different, you know, the characters come in and out of those stories. But the book I'm writing right now is my 10th book, and it is completely separate from those. My protagonist is a 47-year-old librarian who is unassuming, quiet. She kind of blends into the background. She always wears a cardigan sweater, and the children call her the sweater lady. But what no one knows about her is that she came of age during the war in Bosnia. Circumstances thrust her into the war, and she fought in the militias and became a fierce young woman. But she had to escape Bosnia, and she's been living in Minnesota quietly for 30 years, and now her past has come to visit her, and she has to go back and find that girl she was when she was 17. I don't have a title yet, and the book will be coming out in the spring of 2025, but I've got the first draft done, and I'm doing revisions, and I'm really, really loving it.
Wonderful. I mean, it must be, you know, a little bit scary, but also kind of a delightful experience, because you're leaving these characters behind and working with someone you haven't introduced yet to your audience.
that aspect isn't scary as much as the fact that this girl is a 17-year-old Bosnian Muslim female, and I'm not. So I had to do a lot of research. I've got a couple of really good sources who are helping me understand Bosnia. They were people who came of age in Bosnia during the war, and they're helping me with my research. So I'm really excited about that aspect of it as well.
Wonderful. If you want to talk to Alan Eskins, call 855-915-9636, and we'll have a chat with Alan. You can ask him questions about writing, about what he's doing. One question I have for you, Alan, is music. Can you give me a few of your favorite Desert Island discs, whether they're albums or actual, you know, just songs or compositions? And by the way, I know it's a very difficult question. So just some things that kind of that you enjoy.
It would be eclectic. It would be a mix tape of Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. Probably Vivaldi's Four Seasons and Charlie Brown Christmas, the soundtrack.
What's it called, the last one?
Charlie Brown, the soundtrack for Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, Charlie Brown Christmas. Oh, it's one of my favorites, absolutely, yeah. With the kids singing Christmas Time Is Here is wonderful. And
that song is just so peaceful. I just love that song.
Yeah.
That would be...
Yeah, there's such a warm sound. It's jazzy, but I remember being a little kid, and even though it's jazz, and I don't listen to jazz, it's just there's a real like acoustic / you know, kind of I don't know direct, beautiful beat to the way Vince Guaraldi played the piano and the way he wrote. Yeah,
and it is so wonderful to listen to, and it's also very melancholy for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, one of the first lines in the Charlie Brown Christmas is, it doesn't feel like Christmas. What's missing?
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful stuff. You mentioned Pink Floyd. Are you more of a early Pink Floyd, middle Pink Floyd, or later Pink Floyd, or all of them?
Middle to later. You know, when I was in high school, The Wall came out, and that was, you know, at the time, I thought it couldn't get any better, but honestly, there are so many good songs from earlier that that's why I would make it a mixtape. So it would have to encompass a lot of those earlier songs as well.
Yeah, I mean, talk about two people, mainly Waters and Gilmore. The other two are wonderful too, but those two going head to head, just sort of having different views, and I mean, talk about sparks flying. I mean, they're neither one on their own is half of what Pink Floyd was all about. I mean, It's a combination of the four of them working together, which always knocked me out. I think Wish You Were Here might be my favorite. But there's so many great releases of theirs, and metal has wonderful stuff on it too. I mean, really dynamite music. Are you going to be touring in the Boston area in the near future, do a book signing or something?
I don't believe so. I have nothing on my schedule right now, and I'm just actually finishing up with my Midwest tour and getting ready to settle in for Christmas. So when the next book comes out, I'll see if I can get you on my schedule, because I would love to come out there.
Yeah, no, that'd be wonderful. How is the land of a 10,000 lakes? You seem to really like Minneapolis and St. Paul and all things Minnesota. What are some of the things that knock you out about Minnesota?
Well, I was raised in Missouri. Mm-hmm. I came here to go to college, and I just fell in love with it. It is, like Massachusetts, it's a really highly, they value education. It's a state that I think has good political leadership. It's a state that we're doing well economically. And then you have the wilderness. You have the Boundary Water Canoe area up north where you can walk for days and never see anybody. You have lakes all over the place. I live on a lake. If you want to go to a show, you can go to the Twin Cities and see what's coming through there. It's got fall. We had snow today. Just a little bit, a trace of snow, but we had snow today. And
really? It's because it was about 80 degrees in Boston today.
80?
It was in the 70s. No kidding. It was definitely between, I'd say, 65 and 80 today, right, in Boston.
We got our first traces of snow just a little bit ago. So.
Wow.
Oh, get settled in for the hard winter. And during the hard winter, I sit in my basement in my most comfortable chair and write novels.
Wonderful. No. Do you have a website you want to point people to, just in case anyone's interested in learning about you and your novels, Alan?
Yeah, and one of the things you can learn on my website is, because I write about a community, people often wonder, you know, which book should I read in which order. So I kind of have it laid out on my website. If you want to follow this character, read these books. So it's www.alleneskens.com. So it's alleneskens.com. Also, you know, I'm on the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Usually it's at aeskens. So if anybody wants to follow me, they can follow me there. And I post there where I'm going to be when I'm going on tour, and when books are coming out and stuff like that. So that's how people can follow me.
Wonderful. I love interviewing authors. I've had a writer talk about Charles Manson, a book called Creepy Crawling. Jeff Melnick wrote that, and he goes into the great detail about how Manson wanted to be a pop star. And, you know, it really got under his, you know, it got into his head that he needed to get revenge on the producers who said, no, you're not good enough to get a record contract. And it's fascinating how he was not just this, you know, boogeyman or something. He actually wanted to be a pop star. He wanted to be one of the Beach Boys, basically. And he actually wrote them a song. And I really love exploring pop music and music and just, you know, literary people like yourself. I mean, your books are written with a lot of intelligence, and they're great stories. I mean, you're one heck of a storyteller.
Thank you.
You got that gift. I mean, honestly, not too many people. I read quite a bit of nonfiction, and it has to be worth it. And I find your writing super worth it. So I'm really, you know, just delighted to have you on my radio program. And I think the Tufts audience enjoyed hearing you, even though we didn't get anyone to call in. But hey, that's what happens sometimes.
Yeah. I'm a little different than most writers as well, because when I was in grade school and high school, I was not a good student at all. I, if it weren't for theater, I would have had no A's whatsoever throughout high school. And I graduated with a 2.5 GPA and barely got into college. But when I got into college, I realized that I kind of liked college, and there were a lot of doors open, and I started learning how to study. But I was never a big reader as a kid. Mm-hmm. And so I come to writing not as... I think most writers come to writing with the idea they grew up reading these books, these novels, thinking, I want to be like that. I want to bring this entertainment to me, to readers, the way they brought it to me. I come at it from a different perspective, and that is, I've always been this huge daydreamer. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to learn how to take these daydreams and make something of them. And so for 20 years, I studied writing just for my own fun. And so I wrote for 20 years. I took classes. I read books. And then I wrote a novel, a manuscript that I thought was probably good enough to get published. And that became my debut novel. And it became a bestseller. And here I am. So, but yeah. I'm the son of a drywaller who really was not, I was a C student at best when I was in high school.
No, I mean, it's. I'm glad, you know, you put pen to paper. You were a criminal defense attorney for many years, but you always had something else going on, and you decided to pursue it. And it wasn't just this, you know, pipe dream or just something like a fantasy or something. It's something that you actually went, and you have the talent, and I'm really glad you did start writing novels.
Well, thank you very much. I am too. I really am. I never thought it would turn into a career. I thought it was just going to be a fun hobby, mm-hmm. you know, and the more I got into it, the more passionate I became about it. And you know, pretty soon it was like you have to take this seriously and try and get published, and it worked out.
Yeah, no, and you took the plunge, and you've achieved quite a bit of success, and I hope you achieve a lot more. Is there any word about a streaming service looking into your writing, or perhaps a major motion picture?
There is always nibbling going on. The Life of Barry was at one time in development, then it is out of development, but there are still people interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
So with COVID and the WGA strike, there's been no movement by my agents to push anything, but now that that's over, I got a new agent working on it, and I keep my fingers crossed. It's icing on the cake for me, but it's something that would be fun to see happen.
Exactly. I would imagine the book signings are just so meaningful, and like people who come in and they comment on how much they appreciate what you've written. That must be a joy.
It is. It really is. I just finished a long library tour here in Minnesota, and it was so much fun to go out and see, go to these small communities. And they don't have bookstores, so I don't go there because during my normal tour, because there's no bookstores there. But I go to the libraries and do events and have people come out and talk about how much they like my books, and you can never get tired of that.
Well, excellent. In the words of Arthur Schopenhauer, talent hits a target no one else can hit. Genius hits a target no one else can see. You have quite a bit of genius in you, Alan. So thank you very much for calling in. I really appreciate talking to you. I wish you great luck or continued great success. So any last words for the Boston listeners?
I just want to thank you, Ben, for inviting me out to Boston to virtually to speak to your audience. And it's been a great pleasure.
Thank you very much. Hey, and take care of yourself, and don't be a stranger. When you next time you're in Boston, look me up, okay?
You got it. I'll do that.
All right. Thank you. Alan Eskins, everybody. Great writer, novelist, and we appreciate him calling in. Here's someone from Minnesota. It's Bob Dylan with Wigwam. Enjoy. La 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 This is WMFO in Medford, and thank you for tuning in to Tufts Freeform Radio. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Alan Eskins. I know I certainly enjoyed it. He put me in the mood for Vince Guaraldi, and we heard three by George Winston, the tunes that Vince Guaraldi made famous, of course. We heard Linus and Lucy, then it was a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, and this one is called Peppermint Patty. It's a treat to be playing music for you and having you listen to Freeform Music, Tufts University Radio. Start your day every Saturday, that is. Start every Saturday off with Mike on the mic. He's on from 7 in the morning till 9, and then it's 1,000 points of light from 9 to 11. Then it's Something About the Women from 11 till 1. Crash Course for the Ravers follows from 1 to 3. Aftertaste from 3 to 4. My show's Acoustic Sailing from 4 to 5. And then it's Is It Crayon or Crayon from 5 until 6. After this one, we'll do a rundown of all the songs. This is going out to Heidi. She wanted Tighten Up. And here it is, Tighten Up by the Black Keys. In the background is Mickey Hart's At the Edge, a thing called Pigs in Space, and it's time for the rundown. On today's Acoustic Sailing, we heard The Grateful Dead with Gathering Flowers for the Master's Bouquet from Dave's Picks, Volume 43. Then it was an interview with Alan Eskins, the terrific fiction writer. He has written many books, including a wonderful book that I'm currently reading called Forsaken Country. And I definitely recommend him. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Alan Eskins. His first book was called The Life We Bury. After the interview with Alan Eskins, we heard Bob Dylan with Wigwam from the Royal Tenenbaum soundtrack. Then it was three by George Winston. We heard Linus and Lucy, a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, and Peppermint Patty from Linus and Lucy, the music of Vince Guaraldi, performed by George Winston. Going out to Heidi, we heard the Black Keys with Tighten Up from Brothers. And then right now, it's Pigs in Space by Mickey Hart. Pretty fun Halloween stuff, wouldn't you say? Pigs in Space by Mickey Hart. This is WMFO in Medford, and I really appreciate everyone listening. I hope you enjoyed all the songs I played. And call 855-915-9636. Crayon, or is it Crayon, will be on next. They'll play anything that you want to hear. That's guaranteed. Remember the words of Mark Twain. The two most important days of your life are, one, the day you were born, and two, the day you find out the reason why. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. And hey, you deserve some applause. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, come on, one more time. Let's hear it from him. Have a wonderful, meaningful weekend. This is WMFO Medford.
They say, repent. has hurt them all, but love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over, it ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop, you feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future, it is murder.